Alright, what's up, apes, and good morning to all of you degenerates out there. You know, despite what you might be thinking by the state that my bananas are in right now, it's actually a phenomenal day over here. Very much not rotten, like those bananas might be a little bit. It was a great day for us over here at the WSL portfolio. We saw 42 basis points rise on the day, so shout out to the homies like Zillow and some of the other positions that performed particularly strongly for us on the day there. So, can't really complain, especially when the S&P only rose 11 basis points here. The NASDAQ rose an embarrassing 23 basis points. So, like I've been saying all year, guys, we got to give these indexes a little bit of a head start because beating them is really just too easy for myself and the rest of the apes over here. Now it's really time to turn on the jet. So, hopefully we can keep this party rocking throughout the rest of 2024. It is currently 7:54 p.m. on this beautiful Wednesday, April 4th, 2024. We're, of course, coming at you with everything and anything you need to know to get started here and have a phenomenal day of trading on Thursday. Now, we got a lot to talk about here, so let's go ahead and dive right in. Like I said, guys, 42 basis point rise for WSO Alpha. Make sure to go and subscribe to the Alpha portfolio as well if you want to keep on track with all of our trades and if you want to stay updated with all of our degeneracy, of course. We're actually going to be launching a Discord channel as well. The Discord is available to all Daily Peel and WSO Alpha subscribers, but there are going to be some premium channels for Alpha subscribers with some really cool shit that all the poors that don't want to sign up for Alpha won't actually be involved in. But, you know, I'm incredibly poor as well, so, you know, maybe we'll let you in. We'll see what the fuck happens. We just want to have some fun with you guys and open up some more channels like that. And what better way to do that than with the degeneracy of Discord? Fits right within our narrative here at The Peel. All right, so we got some banana bits to shout out for you guys here today. So leading into Friday's jobs report, we're getting some data this week that is suggesting that the employment situation in the U.S. is even more jacked, even stronger than we previously expected. You know, unfortunately, I'm not a great example to show that something is strong, but either way, the jobs market definitely is. That's actually our main story of the day here as well. We're going to be kind of dispelling a myth that has been bothering us for quite some time here. So definitely stay tuned to see exactly what the fuck I'm talking about there. Now, VCs, I kind of feel bad for these guys, man. I mean, you know, I know that they're all millionaires, billionaires launching literal, like, trillion-dollar portfolios if you're fucking Masayoshi's son at SoftBank and you're crazy enough to do something like that. But VCs are absolutely wallowing in the aftermath of the digital asset disaster over the past couple of years. Actually, on this, I can say crypto. How about I say crypto catastrophe to keep that alliteration going? But whatever the fuck they're doing, it is keeping them away from getting into the generative AI wave. We saw the lowest amount of funding deals completed in the venture space in the first quarter since 2017, which is pretty amazing to me considering how horrendous 2023 was. So we're definitely going to be following that, probably writing about it relatively soon as well here. Now, J-Pow, now, despite the strength of the U.S. economy, the labor market, the inflation going back to 2%, Jerome Powell still wants us all to be poor and jobless. He came out yesterday with some, I won't say bearish commentary, but basically saying that there's really no reason to cut rates right now, and maybe he's right. So once again, that's something else we'll be talking about in a minute here. And finally, we got some swing state data from the Wall Street Journal. Everybody knows that the U.S. election is basically going to be decided by seven states or so. And I'm not a political expert. I don't know exactly what those states are. To be honest with you, I didn't read the article, but I did look at the charts in it, and it shows that swing states are clearly pulling in the direction of one particular candidate. So be sure to check that out as well. And speaking of that particular candidate, be sure to check out our video on Donald Trump's company here too. So we just had a 5-minute peel breakdown of Trump Media and Technology Group, and yeah, it went about as well as you would expect. So make sure to go check that out when you get a chance here. Tell us what other companies you want to see us break down and whatever the nonsense you want to see me yap about going forward. Now, let's go ahead and get into the big story of the day. The macro monkey for us is counting is hard. Counting is really hard. Reading is super boring. Thinking is a force. And like I said, most of all, counting, basically impossible. I mean, I don't know how anybody does that shit, especially not the U.S. government, because they really seem to struggle with doing so. You know, over the past year or so, we've been seeing some very strong job additions. We've been seeing the labor force participation rate essentially hold steady at around like a 62-63% level. And despite that, we've been seeing the unemployment rate climb. So mathematically, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The math is not math whatsoever, but still, it's what's been happening and it's what our government is reporting. So we think that we finally uncovered an answer for that, thanks to the great reporting from the journalists, I guess, over at the Wall Street Journal here. So let's get into some of these numbers here, guys. So unemployment rate versus job additions. As we know, February was an absolutely jacked report. Well, February was an absolutely jacked report for the labor market. We saw about 275,000 jobs get added. And at the same time, the unemployment rate creeped up to about 3.9% once again. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but it starts to make a little bit of sense when we factor in the WSJ's analysis, and that is, of course, drumroll please, immigration. So, in case you guys haven't noticed, there's been a lot of discussions about the southern border and illegal immigration in general, because actually the vast majority of illegal immigration in the United States historically has come from overstayed visas via air travel. So we're going to account for that in this analysis as well here. Basically, what that means is that the U.S. population is actually probably a little bit higher than the Census Bureau thinks. The Census Bureau reported a 0.5% growth in the U.S. population in 2023, while the Congressional Budget Office estimated an increase of about 0.8%. Then we have places like the Brookings Institute estimating that it was even higher than that. So we have no fucking idea what the U.S. population is, but everybody go out there and get your welfare checks if you want it. It seems like they're giving it out for free. But effectively, this is causing a bit of a discrepancy in the analysis of the unemployment rate. And the big reason comes down to the fact that the Bureau of Labor Statistics is stuck in 1846, and they have no idea how to use modern technology to count these things, other than having what I can only assume are 75-year-old victims of Bernie Madoff that are still working sit down and pencil out these numbers themselves. But effectively, the way that these numbers are reported in the United States is twofold. There's the establishment survey and the household survey. The establishment survey is when basically the BLS sends out these surveys to establishment or businesses and says, hey, how's your hiring going for the quarter? They ask a bunch of questions like that. And the household survey is similar, but it goes out to individuals and basically says, do you have a job? So we can get some discrepant reporting in that. Now, the establishment survey is to get the number of job additions, and the household survey is to get the unemployment rate. So if we are sending out the household survey to the U.S. population broadly, very generally, just asking like, hey, do you have a job? If the population is larger than we expect, then the unemployment rate is actually going to need to be a little bit lower than what has been reported thus far. So that could potentially explain the adjustment and the spread between the unemployment rate reported in the establishment survey as well as the household survey, or the number of job additions reported in both of these surveys as well. Definitely check out the spread in that chart in the piece here too. If you don't subscribe to the Daily PL, I mean, you're basically dead to me. So go ahead and look at these charts right here, and you'll start to kind of understand exactly what's going on. Now, obviously, a higher US population is great, but it's even better when we know who the fuck is in this country. So we can start to figure out that stuff, then that would make this employment situation a lot clearer, and it would make it a lot clearer what the hell Jay Powell and the FOMC should do going forward. So why should we care about this? Well, because employment matters quite a bit to economic growth, prosperity, and not having a revolution start anytime soon. Speaking of revolution, that Civil War movie from A24 coming out, God, that thing looks sick. It's low-key haunting as fuck how realistic it seems. I can't wait to see it, but definitely go check that out. Hopefully, it doesn't actually happen in person, but, we actually did get some data yesterday on the jobs market, though. We got the ADP employment report. They said that there was about 184,000 private payroll additions in March, and basically that was a lot higher than what was expected. Economists had guesstimated that it would be more like 150,000. Obviously, they were way off because those guys can't really tie their shoes without an instruction manual. But the reason that this matters is because the FOMC, they have a dual mandate. Certain places like the ECB, the European Central Bank, they have a single mandate, and that is just price stability. Whereas here in the US, we're bold, we go big, and we have a dual mandate. So that is both price stability and employment stability. We basically want to make sure that everybody has a job that wants a job. And so it's Jay Powell and the Fed's job to ensure that, I guess, kind of like your parents would when you're graduating college and you have absolutely nothing lined up with, which, if that's the case, go check out the WSO Academy, by the way. But essentially, what we're seeing here is if job growth is as strong as it has been, and if the unemployment rate is actually lower than what we would typically be expecting here, then that gives Jay Powell a little bit more ability to start cutting rates. Now, the funny thing there is that why would we be cutting rates if the economy is looking really good? Basically, what we're seeing is, we just talked about last week about how we have very strong GDP growth at the end of the first quarter or the end of the last quarter of 2023. We also talked about how inflation is starting to retreat back. We got the PCE report at the end of the month that was showing about 2% inflation for core PCE in the last quarter of 2023. All very good stuff. And if the employment market, if the employment situation is doing even better than we would expect, that gives Jay Powell more ability to cut rates and hopefully not trigger, a ridiculous expansion like that. Because, if the economy is strong, it should, in theory, be able to handle that. But at the same time, if the economy is doing well, why would we cut rates? I just came up with this new phrase here today that I want to introduce to Mr. Jerome Powell. So everybody else, turn off your cameras. This is a message for just Jay Powell. Sir, great to meet you. I have a saying that I want to share with you, and that is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I just came up with that myself here, and it seems like the U.S. economy is firing on all cylinders with rates in that 5.25 to 5.5% range. Why would we change it? Well, obviously, because we all know that the real purpose of life is to go out there and create shareholder value. We want to make sure that all of our economic overlords are maximizing profits consistently as much as possible. So if we can cut rates to do that, then we might as well, even if that's going to take away firepower for us to address the next recession that hits. So that's kind of the situation that we're in right now. We are still continuing to see a steepening in the yield curve, which some are starting to call a bear steepening, and I'll explain what the fuck that means tomorrow in the piece. We don't want to step on too much of our content here today. So before I do, let's go ahead and get into some of the stock moves of the day. Super ripe, so ignore these bananas for right now, was Paramount Global. So Paramount Global, in case you guys didn't know, they are going through a bit of a tiff right now. Basically, the founder of, or not necessarily the founder, but the guy who turned Paramount Global into the global brand that it is now, he unfortunately passed away at the end of 2023, and heiress Sherry Redstone is looking to just get the fuck out of there. She is a non-executive chairperson. She does not want anything to do with this company. Just kind of wants to collect the check and chill, and I mean, that's exactly what I would do if I was in that position. But basically, we found out yesterday that she and Skydance Media are coming to a deal where basically Skydance is set to take over Sherry's 80% control of Paramount Global. Obviously, investors think it's going to happen at a fat premium, so the stock was up more than 14% on the day. Now, another ripe stock we have is Mr. Spotify, the music streaming service. Guys, it has taken a while, but inflation is coming for your ears too. You know, yeah, I really think it's gone too far with this. It's increasing the price of our music subscriptions, especially over at Spotify. Basically, Bloomberg report came out yesterday and said that internal talks at Spotify, the Swedish music streaming company that is way better than Apple Music, and I don't care what anybody out there says, you better be listening to me on Spotify, by the way. If you're not, you're not watching on YouTube, you're also dead to me in that case. But either way, they said by the end of April, subscriptions are going to increase by about $1 to $2 per month. They're also introducing a new basic plan that costs exactly the same as the premium plan costs right now at $11 per month. So expect that inflation to keep going. We can also blame King Apple for the insane 30% tax that they continue to levy on Spotify, but Spotify is, of course, fighting that in court, so maybe this can help accommodate that tax and the legal fees that are coming with trying to eviscerate that tax. Now, let's go ahead and get into some of the rotten bananas of the day here. We have, first and foremost, Ulta Beauty. Probably should change the name to Ulta Ugly here today, because that's what a lot of its consumers are going to be going forward, according to the CEO. Mr. Dave Kimball came out here yesterday, made the classic mistake of being honest as a CEO. Everybody knows that's not something that you ever want to do in that position. He came out here and basically said that the demand warning that they had issued following their fourth quarter results is actually happening a lot sooner. Basically, they came and said that they were expecting a weak second half of 2024, but it turns out nobody's buying their shitty products in the first half of 2024 either. So obviously they're expecting a weaker quarter. Investors were not too happy to hear that. Stock is down more than 15% on a day. Now we have Intel Corporation. Intel is one of America's favorite companies right now, especially with the CHIPS Act. It's giving them a shit ton of money to go ahead and play ball with to try to compete with names like NVIDIA and more international chip names. But effectively, yesterday they came out here and they also made the mistake of being just way too honest. And this wasn't the CEO, but this was in their financial reporting. Now, if you watched our video on Trump Media and Technology Group, you would know that the key strategy when you have bad results is to just obfuscate as much as possible and make it as difficult as you possibly can to find any information. Intel did the exact opposite, despite the lousiness of this information. So basically, they came out and for the first time, they reported financials on the company's foundry unit. So in case you guys didn't know, the vast majority of Intel sales do not come necessarily from chips. It's more like, well, not from like artificial intelligence, data center, that style chips. It's from stuff more associated with like PCs, that kind of shit. So they came out yesterday and for the first time separated out their foundry business because it's becoming material enough to need to be separated effectively. So they said that they generated about $18 billion in sales in 2023. That came right in with expectations, but what wasn't expected was the company's operating loss is an enormous $7 billion. Now, that is almost half of all the revenue that they're losing there. Obviously, investors were pretty disappointed to see that. Sent the stock down 8.2% on the day. All right, finally, we have the thought banana, and we have, you know, Nelson Peltz. He still doesn't got it. He got slammed, bitched around in his proxy fight with Disney. This was really embarrassing from the get-go, and like I've said before, I don't really like to bully the elderly unless you're a politician, of course, then it's fair game. Nelson Peltz is 81 years old, and his family should have told him to retire literal decades ago, but the guy's still going at it, and he picked the wrong guy to go at, which was Mr. Bob Iger. So, a little bit of backstory with Disney. Bob Iger bailed out of the company a couple of years ago and picked some dude with the same name who ran the parks division to come and become the CEO, Mr. Bob Chapek. Chapek was an embarrassment to the Disney brand, completely fucked it up, so they invited Mr. Bobby Iger back in to try to clean things up. He's done a decent job with it, but not good enough for Mr. Nelson Peltz. And so, in the past year or so, actually it was January of 2023, Peltz started a proxy battle against Disney using a lot of the shares of a former Marvel executive. Basically, this Marvel executive transferred a lot of his shares into Nelson Peltz's companies. Now, he was still the beneficial owner of them, but he effectively gave control to Nelson Peltz and Triad Partners, that's Peltz's firm, so that they could effect change at Disney using his shares and kind of build up an actual stake so that he could have that sway at this shareholder meeting. Now, it did not go well whatsoever. So, we see that Disney stock has achieved a meteoric return of about 3.46% in the past 5 years. Absolutely embarrassing. And so that gives them even more credence to be a little bit upset. Still, it didn't end up working out. Basically, Peltz was looking for a board seat, the contested board seat that he was going for. The person that held it before got 63% of the vote, so she was able to hold on to that seat. Bobby Iger got 94% of the vote to remain in the CEO chair, and overall 75% of retail investors just agreed with what the company had recommended. Now, if these retail investors vote like I do when I get these kind of this bullshit, quite honestly, this what should be spam sent to my email, effectively what you're going to do is go in there and check things off so that they shut the fuck up and stop sending you those spammy ass emails. What Peltz was looking to do was effectively make Disney Plus a lot more like Netflix in terms of pumping out mid-ass content that, you know, a lot of people around the country will watch for a week, freak out about and talk about around the water cooler. They're definitely not doing that, but they also wanted to revamp the company's creative unit to start actually pumping out some new content instead of just, you know, changing certain aspects about the main characters in movies and calling it a new release. They also said that ESPN needed to start acting like the fucking brand that it is, especially with delivering sports content over streaming services and, of course, in gambling, because what could possibly be more fun than that? And then, of course, finally, most of all, Peltz was saying, you need to figure out a non-horrendous succession plan. Bobby Iger himself is an old fuck. He's about 71 years old, or maybe 72 now, but either way, we need these elderly men brawling in the boardroom, excuse me. But they are just going at each other's throats, and clearly we know who won this one. Now, the big takeaway here is that what Peltz did, it's not necessarily going to be limited to Disney. In the post-COVID, post-ZERP environment, companies are actually kind of have a hurdle rate that they're going to have to achieve in these projects that they invest in. Otherwise, they could just take the cash that would be invested in that project, throw it in treasuries, and earn like a 4-5% yield. So that hurdle rate is no longer that 1-2% raise that it was for the past decade and a half. It's more like 4-5%. So in addition to it being a stock picker's market right now, it's a project picker's market for what project these companies want to invest in. So it's going to be a little bit more difficult going forward. They're going to have to pay a lot more attention because this 81-year-old guy, Nelson Peltz, apparently he's still horny to affect changes at a lot of these companies. So they better have him on their radar. Now, Disney is actually making a lot of these changes anyway, just kind of subtly and under the table, not to give the 81-year-old his due. But that's effectively where we are right now. Disney shares were up on the day, so I guess they're pretty happy with it. Otherwise, our questions going forward is this the last Peltz that Mr. Nelson Peltz is trying to scalp from a company? Probably not. I mean, if he's anything like Warren Buffett or these other kind of like tycoons of the investment industry, he isn't going to be stopping anytime soon. Now, if not, what company is going to be next? Maybe it's Wall Street Oasis. That would be pretty interesting, actually. But finally, what kind of effects will this proxy fight have on all of corporate America? We're very interested to see what kind of projects these companies announce going forward, given the temperatures rising in the activist environment. So we'll see what happens going forward. Otherwise, guys, that pretty much does it here for us for the day. Thank you for joining us, as always, on the Daily PM video stream. It is now 8:13 p.m. on this beautiful April 3rd, 2024. So thank you guys for joining us, as always. Go ahead and check out our breakdown of Trump Media Technology Group. We also published one on Reddit just a day prior. We got Palantir, Lulu, Nike out there. So let us know what companies and what other shit you want to hear us yap about, and we'll be more than happy to get started on that as soon as we can. For now, happy investing, happy trading. Thanks, everybody. Bye now.
And thanks to you, my listeners at Wall Street Oasis. If you have any suggestions whatsoever, please don't hesitate to send them my way, Patrick at wallstreetoasis.com. Until next time.